a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Okay. My name is Dan Lederman, State Senator from District 16, which is Union County and about a third of Lincoln County.
Representative Cronin from District 23, the northern and central part of the South Dakota. I guess just thanks for having us here again. I'll just kind of give you a quick update on the House side and then turn it back, or we'll introduce my Chair of Appropriations, Representative Romkema from Spearfish. The House has about 176 bills have been dropped so far, and we're anticipating probably between 50 and 100 more. So the committees are going to start working pretty full schedule this week. We've had a number of our committees have been slated pretty full, and of course had some big bills up. So other than that, I'll let Fred introduce himself, and then we'll hear from the Senate.
Thank you. I'm Representative Fred Romkema from Lawrence County, which encompasses Spearfish, Lee, Deadwood, Central City, and Whitewood. And I'm currently chair of Appropriations. We've gone through approximately 15 hearings of the 34 hearings that we will complete this year. We've seen a total of 5 bills so far this year. So we're just getting started in the process.
Oh, that's automatic. Okay. Well, this week in the Senate, we've dealt with several issues. I think one of the highlights of this week is serving on Senate State Affairs Committee, being able to listen to the stories of our veterans who served in Vietnam, and passing Senate Bill 83, which designates March 30th as the Welcome Home Vietnam Veterans Day. Prime sponsor of that was Senator Holeen. And many veterans came out to make remarks on behalf of the bill, and there was unanimous support for the bill in the Senate State Affairs Committee. Other bills that we discussed and got out of the Senate were Senate Bill 70 we voted on yesterday. That came out with, I think, a 30-2 vote. And what Senate Bill 70 does is, it was the Public Safety Improvement Act. It was a process of bipartisan effort stretching across all three sections of government, judiciary, executive, and legislative. It was a long process to put the bill together, and there were a lot of stakeholders. But we're proud to have been able to pass that bill with support from both sides of the aisle, and I think that's important. The other bills that we passed were Senate Bills 3, 4, and 5. Each one had different topics that it's touched upon, but in all, they helped to have more clarity to the purpose and direction of our higher education. And I was lucky to have met with the Board of Regents this summer, and we talked about what was going on with those bills or what initiatives that they were putting together. And this package of bills will help placement of students. It'll help us keep track of the process or the grades that we're getting, the level of education that we're giving our higher education students. Other than that, we're diligent in watching what's going on with the funding for the pine beetles to help the Black Hills. The governor has proposed a $2 million appropriation to help fight that. And when we look at the federal government and when we try to rely on those funding dollars to fight that in the Black Hills, we want to make sure that we have the funds available and at our disposal to help fight that. We just don't know what happens. We have a very short session, so we meet 2 months out of the year. And if something happens down the road, maybe in a few months, where the federal government is not able to provide those funding, at least we've been able to put forth our best foot to fight that. Other than that, we're waiting for some bills to come over from the House. We're excited about House Bill 1061, which passed by a wide margin from the House, which would expand our captive insurance market. And what you've seen in the last few years is a lot of states, they try to jockey for a better position in the captive insurance market industry. Basically what that is, it's not a very well-known industry. It's a way of allowing corporations to self-insure. And states that are on the forefront of this had been able to get large amounts of capital deposited in their banks from offshore accounts that are currently held in offshore accounts. And I'd like to thank Lieutenant Governor Matt Michaels and the executive branch for working on that legislation over the last 2 years. I've been involved in those discussions, and I've brought some of the expert testimony to them to help draft the bill so that South Dakota can be competitive in that. And finally, one bill that we heard yesterday in committee that I'd like to talk about is SB 85. And currently, South Dakota ethanol is restricted from sale and use in several countries around the world. And what SB 85 does is it removes the requirement in South Dakota to denaturalize ethanol. Now, a long time ago, we put that into law that all ethanol would have to be denaturalized. And countries like Brazil and other European countries, they do not allow denaturalized ethanol into their market. And we've seen a steep rise in the need for ethanol and for our production. And so Senator Russ Olson was the prime sponsor on that. And we heard testimony yesterday from the ethanol industry, and we're proud of passing SB 85 to help with the markets for ethanol. And with that, I'll hand it over to Representative Cronin or Rahm. Come on.
I'd like to jump in a little bit about the pine beetle epidemic. I just came from a briefing before appropriations, and the infestation is the greatest in history. One of the charts depicts the number of trees infected in the millions, but depicting in thousands didn't really capture the essence of the infestation. And there's also photographs that indicate that the efforts in Custer State Park have been very, very effective, that the number of trees infested per square acre, if you will, are much, much, much less than the neighboring forest. So I want to commend the governor for putting the $2 million into the budget. The tip of the spear, per se, is Spearfish Canyon, which is near where I live, in that the infestation is moving from south to north, and it'd be a tragedy to lose that canyon to the bugs, the bug menace, the pine beetles, if you will. That's a treasure for our state, well known around, certainly in the region, I think perhaps nationally as well. And there are pine beetles on the ridges above that canyon as we speak. But this effort is not confined just to that area, but I think it's indicative of the importance of that effort. And if I might, just for a second, if I could talk just briefly about appropriations. We have about 34 hearings, and we're going to spend about $4.2 billion. About $1.3 billion of that is the general fund, and that's what we talk about, it seems, every year. $1.7 billion of that budget is federal funds, and as you know, there's concern regarding the future of the federal funds, the sequestration and so on, and the cliff, etc. And so just something to keep in mind. In addition, there's another billion in other funds that doesn't get talked about very much. But at the end of the session, we're going to have heard from 34 departments, if you will. We'll have testified before us, and we will have allocated roughly $4.1 billion. And of that, about 1.3 will be general funds.
Okay. Any questions?
Do you have any questions from the callers on the phones? If so, please #6 to unmute your phone line. Thank you.
I think we're pretty boring, evidently.
I do have a couple questions.
Okay.
This is just showing my ignorance. I don't Oh, thank you.
Sorry.
I'm Victoria Wicks. I'm with Public Radio. I would like a definition of the captive insurance, and also I'm not that familiar with ethanol. What is denatured? What keeps that from being marketable elsewhere?
Victoria, thank you for the question. First of all, now if we thought the first part of this was boring, I'm going to start talking about insurance. So you might want to pull a pillow up. Okay, so captive insurance companies are pretty much what they say. They're captive. Okay, so let's say a large corporation is having a hard time finding an insurance company that is willing to insure a certain risk. Okay, so let's use, for my neck of the woods, we have a lot of medical facilities, and let's say they are having a hard time finding funding for either liability or some type of workman's comp or some type of issue that's specific for an industry. And the market, the insurance market, just doesn't have that product available, or if they try to find that product, its cost makes it unreachable for certain companies to get that insurance. What captive insurance does is it allows that company to take their own revenues, put it into a separate account, deem it as an insurance company so that set up its own separate insurance company and fund it itself, and then pay the premiums to that insurance company from the original owner of the parent company. And then when there are claims, then use the funds from the insurance company to pay that out. So it's basically like self-insurance, but it's setting up its own insurance company to self-insure. Now, there's some tax benefits to this. I think the limit is $1.2 million is what is the minimum amount that you have to put into that. And then the premiums that you pay in are obviously tax deductible. So you, as a corporation, get a little bit of a bump by being able to pay your own insurance company for the funds, but also you get a little bit of an incentive because you don't pay taxes on the funds that you're paying to the insurance company for the premiums. Now, this practice has been around for a long time. It's really been around centuries if you look at companies like Lords of London, who have been doing self-insurance since the 1700s. But this form has been around since the 50s and 60s. And what we've seen is, over time, the trend has been to put monies offshore. Well, there has been some different changes at the federal level that limit what offshore captive insurance companies can do. So what we're seeing now is, over the last few years, in response to that, a lot of those dollars are coming back to the United States. And when they're coming back to the United States, what states are they going to go to? So we have these people in the industry who understand all the different states' laws and are able to, they're captive insurance managers, captive insurance company managers, and what they're looking at is states that are the best to do business in, that have maybe the least amount of costs for licensing and for review processes that are paid for by the captive insurance companies. And South Dakota is competitive, but yet we have other states like Delaware and Vermont and Utah who've seen a dramatic rise in these because they've been pretty flexible in the way that they manage it. So in response, what South Dakota has done is it's not only created a niche that we will allow protected cell captive insurance companies, and I can go, it's called a protected cell, so that multiple companies are able to put together to come up with the $1.2 million requirement, but yet protect themselves from the risks of the other companies that are adding the money into to come up with the 1.2. It's a fairly new way that captive insurance has been able to attract other people to smaller businesses to come into that fold. And we've codified that in this bill. And if it passes, we'll be one of the few states that actually plots that out. But the other thing that we've done is we've expanded the value of our trust departments in South Dakota by allowing trust captives. So now trust companies are able to set up their own captive insurance companies as well. So we're adding a benefit to what we're doing for trusts in South Dakota, which we've been very successful at in the last few years. South Dakota has become a leader in trust funds. And then the other thing that we did in the bill is that it designates a special purpose or a group purpose. So we've given some ability to the director of insurance to work with different types of captives that want to promote or present a new type of group effort. We have the ability to bring dollars into the state, the value to opening up this market and to trying to attract these companies are twofold. One, our local banks can see a massive influx of capital that they can use to give out in loans for small businesses to grow. We're talking $1.2 million per captive insurance company. I think right now Vermont has, I think, 570 captive insurance companies. So if you can imagine, if we were able to bring in just a fraction of those over the next year, how much capital we're talking about. The other thing that is the benefit that we hope to see is high-paying jobs. With the management of these dollars comes a lot of responsibility for white-collar jobs in the range of accounting and in banking. And we're hoping that we're able to bring some high-paying jobs to South Dakota with that bill as well. The other, switching gears here to the other part of your question about ethanol, denatured. I don't know if I said denatured. Sorry. This is a bill that I don't have as much information on. I heard testimony yesterday. But right now there are certain countries like Brazil and European countries that do not allow denatured ethanol across their border. By the restriction that we had from denatured ethanol was brought about in the law, I'm guessing approximately 20 years ago. And what it does is it basically makes the ethanol non-potable. And I think that was more of a temperance issue to make sure that we didn't have moonshiners with ethanol. And obviously we haven't seen an issue with people drinking ethanol. But the industry worldwide, I think we're specific to that. I think when we look at the world market of ethanol, you don't see that requirement in other countries. So this is a way I commend Senator Olson, because by passing this bill through our committee, getting it out, and if we pass it as a legislature, it'll make it number one less costly for our ethanol producers to make their product, which makes them more competitive in selling the product in the world market, I'm hoping that it will create more jobs in South Dakota and increase the value of the product that we have.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions from callers on the line?
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Would you?